Hello, my name is Woody. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods, a podcast about Deftones. My guest today is Chris Enriquez, a guy so nice I spoke to him twice. I'll explain in a minute. Chris is the drummer for Spotlights. That was a clip from their song, Continue the Capsize. Spotlights toured with Deftones and Refused in 2016. So you'll hear about that today and about his experience interviewing the band for Revolver. More specifically, he's going to talk about a pretty wild time he had after he interviewed them. Nutty. Chris is also one of the hosts of Age of Quarantine, which is cool as hell. If you haven't checked it out on Instagram or YouTube, Chris has been talking to amazing musicians, and he's super smart, so he asks great questions, and he has a ton of great insight. He also plays guitar in a hardcore band called Total Meltdown, and being from New York, he's been a big fan of Sergio Vega for a long time. So he told me some cool stuff about Sergio I didn't know. I had a ton of fun talking to Chris, especially the second time around. So, what had happened was I was recording our conversation, but Zoom zoomed on me. So I lost half of it. I didn't lose it. More like Zoom took it. At any rate, because I fucked up, I reached out to Chris and he was cool enough to talk to me a second time and hang out with me even longer. So for the first 25 minutes or so, you're going to hear part of our first conversation, and I will jump in before we move into the second one. This is my conversation with Chris Enriquez.
I got into Deftones pretty much literally like within weeks of Adrenaline coming out. I think that was 1995. As I was starting to get into shows, like going and seeing shows and bands on my own. When I say that, I'm talking about hardcore shows, of course. Like, I was starting to get old enough to go out on my own and check stuff out. And I remember people in the Long Island hardcore scene talking about Deftones a lot. And oddly enough, I remember some of the guys in Glassjaw. I say that ironically because there's a little bit of a similarity in their sound. And at that time, they didn't sound like that at all. But I remember them talking very highly of Deftones, and I had to check out, you know, what it was all about. And I was a huge Bad Brains fan, and a Quicksand fan. There was something about that first record that really resonated with me. You hear a little of that Bad Brains influence, and there's a similarity there with Quicksand, and I was hooked, man. And I also remember hearing about them because they were on the Crow 2 soundtrack. I think we're in a movie. So that was really how I first found out about Deftones.
Were you playing in bands at that time?
I was. I was playing in no bands that were worth mentioning that were known or anything like that. I was in an all Asian emo band called Fall with Grace.
Mentioning. That is absolutely worth mentioning.
Yeah, that's back awesome. Back when emo wasn't a shitty word. We were into Fugazi and that sort of Jawbox and that sort of thing. It wasn't like embarrassing yet.
But you mentioned a lot of people from the Long Island hardcore scene were into Deftones. Do you think it was, do you think that was the case, or was it just sort of your immediate circle of friends?
No, it was definitely the case. And one thing I'll say that makes a lot of sense about that is that, the Long Island hardcore scene eventually became popular for bands like Glassjaw and Take Back Sunday and Brand New or whatever. But at the time, there were some really good bands that you could say were a little off kilter. We called it hardcore, but it wasn't like New York hardcore, like Agnostic Front or Cro-Mags. Like, there were bands that were considered hardcore in Long Island that sounded like Jane's Addiction, but would call themselves hardcore. There were bands that sounded like Fugazi that would call themselves hardcore. So there was something about the Deftones sound when we all heard it for the first time that kind of sounded like what we were associating ourselves with already, with this sort of like post-hardcore, post-grungy kind of thing that was going on. And they just resonated with a lot of people I knew in the scene. Melodic vocals, heavy music, those were some characteristics of bands at the time. I could reference Silent Majority or Glassjaw, Mind Over Matter. Those are some bands that were around at that time that, they don't necessarily sound like Deftones, but like the idea of melodic vocals and heavy music and heavy guitars and stuff. I think that's why people in Long Island really liked the Deftones so much.
So did you find yourself coming back like for every album after that? Were you pretty much like a fan, or did...
Oh my God. Yeah. Immediately. I'll be honest with you. I liked adrenaline. I wasn't like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I ever heard, until I heard Around the Fur when I was in college. That was like my jaw dropped. So I liked adrenaline. I came to appreciate it more later. There's obviously classics on there, but it was really Around the Fur where my jaw hit the floor and I fucking listened to that record over and over again.
What about it? What did it for you?
For one thing, I really liked the production on it. Like, there's a slicker production on that. I think it's the same producer, right? Terry Date. But there was something about that production that did it for me. I was always, I'll compare it to like Tool. Autumn had a very like kind of slick production and Quicksand Manic Compression. And like that record to me had something about it that had that production value that I liked. And the songs, you know, I feel like that was the beginning of Chino really getting super melodic. You know, we hear he's got melodic vocals on Adrenaline, but the songs got more melodic too. You know, Be Quiet and Drive, you know, that obviously is a good example. That's a classic, but just in general, there was just something more melodic happening there. The balance of the heaviness and the melody blended for me in the best way possible. I mean, we're talking about, you have a song with Max Caballero where it's fucking brutal as fuck, and then you have like these really emotive, beautiful vocals, and it wasn't cheesy, you know. It was just perfect. Something about it was perfect and dark, you know.
And so in college at that point, you had your own money. You were probably playing in bands still. So, and a big fan of Deftones, were you like t-shirts, posters? Were you like that heavy into it? Or were you very much still like in the hardcore scene and sort of focused on that?
At that point, I'll be honest with you. I had like kind of been phasing out of like the traditional hardcore thing, as in like I was no longer wearing Snapcase shirts and wearing JNCOs and that whole thing that was going on. I wasn't wearing Earth Crisis t-shirts at that point. I was starting to wear skinnier jeans, and I was getting into things like Texas Is the Reason and Promise Ring, and that was kind of like, if you were at a college age, and this is 97, 98, that's kind of like, if you're a hardcore kid, especially in Long Island or New York, you might be gravitating towards that. And so I really liked the Deftones, but to be honest with you, and I'm saying this lightly because they did so much for me, and I'm like friends with those guys, but the nu metal thing was sort of like, they got lumped in with it, even though they weren't really a nu metal band. They did a great job distancing themselves from that. So I was always afraid to like, to rock anything that would make people think I was like into that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? So, but I would listen to it all the time, and me and my friends talked about them all the time, and we put them in the same boat as like Hum, you know, or bands like Sunny Day Real Estate or Hum that were like cool. You know, but yeah, so I didn't have posters or shirts, but I listened to them all the time and I talked about it a lot.
Since you brought it up, and actually a couple of things, because I want to ask you about seeing them on tour, if you'd gotten that opportunity yet, because you mentioned Snapcase, and it was probably about that time that they were touring with Snapcase and Quicksand. But also talking about sort of how they get lumped into a scene. And it's so like tired to hearing like them getting lumped in with nu metal. I wonder if you think a couple of things, like if they should be lumped in more with those bands like Hum and Sunny Day Real Estate. I've always thought like more Smashing Pumpkins, because that's sort of the similar era that they emerged out of. But I'm also curious to ask you, like, if who are their peers now? Like, if Ohms was the only album that you'd ever heard, like where would you put them?
You know, it's funny. It's an interesting question. There's a lot of bands that I think that are not as well known, that like Far from Sacramento as well. They were peers. They obviously did some collaborations together and stuff like that. Definitely not a nu metal band, definitely a post-hardcore band. So I think of Deftones as like maybe like peers that happened to get much bigger of bands like Will Haven and Far, who are both from Sacramento, but absolutely Quicksand because they were friends from back in the day. I mean, Hum, and I would say, because it was like a similar era, Smashing Pumpkins came out a little prior to them, but there's definitely a musical connection there. To directly answer your question, if Ohms came out today and I never heard anything else by them, that's a tough question to answer. I mean, I'm going to answer it in a weird way. I know that like Chino is really into Isis, the band, and he's into some more like sophisticated stuff, and he's very hands-on with the cool bands that he picks to bring on tour and stuff. So I like to think that Deftones, if they were like a brand new band and Ohms just came out, that they would be like this cool band that would be lumped in with like all this eclectic stuff that's coming out today, you know. Working at Revolver, it's almost like genreless at this point. Like the same person that listens to Chelsea Wolfe, who is also from Sacramento, which is interesting that I just mentioned that. But the same person who listens to Chelsea Wolfe probably listens to Power Trip, the Cult Leader, and maybe Ghost Main. And yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, you know, I think that Deftones, if they were just like some brand new band, like, you know, I'd be like, oh yeah, I listen to them and Turnstile and fucking Chelsea Wolfe. They would just be like a cool new band to me, you know.
It's interesting to think of them that way too, like genreless. It is sort of genreless. I think it's new territory in a sense. It's pretty cool. Okay, so I mentioned the Snapcase Quicksand tour. Had you seen them live by that point yet? Like by the time that you were in college?
I saw them. I'll never forget it. I saw them at Roseland. Rest in peace, Roseland. That was a legendary New York venue. A couple thousand people you could fit in that place, and it was the Around the Fur tour. And Quicksand reunited and opened up. Snapcase was not on the bill. I think it was a band called Pitch Shifter or Metro Shifter. It was either one of those shifter bands. But I know this is about Deftones, but I have to say, and I'm going to drop a name here because it's interesting, but at the time, I was in a band called Runner Up that turned into Take Back Sunday, and it was with me and Eddie Reyes, the founding member of Take Back Sunday. And he's a bigger Colombian dude, a little bit older than me, came out of like the hardcore scene, and the mosh pit for Quicksand was more violent than any pit that I had ever seen in my life at that point. Even Madball and like Converge, like I'd never seen anything like it. The entire place erupted and he got knocked out within the first song, got a concussion. They took him out to an ambulance. And I remember like trying to find a place for dear life to like hold on to, because everyone was swinging. Like the 90s for Quicksand in New York City was brutal. I'm telling you, for like anything like that, that kind of music in New York City. So I was, that's what I remember. And then Deftones came on and fuck, it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. They were in their prime, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I always talk about the live show experience as something that is otherworldly. It's just a different, obviously I'm biased, you know, I'm sort of a fan, but that's part of the reason that I keep coming back. You know what I mean? Like the live show is just the shit. Like they're just, the energy is different. It's different.
Oh yeah.
So, and I think maybe that's a good segue into asking you, like, how did you end up? Because I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who's opened up for Deftones before. So, should we fast forward a little bit here? I mean,
yeah, it's totally up to you, man.
I would love to talk about like all the albums and stuff and like where you rank them. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit, but I do want to know about opening for Deftones. And I mean, you were on tour with them like for a handful of dates. Like, tell me.
It's 2 weeks. Yeah. It's an amazing story. And I have to say it's not my story. It's my singer, Mario, and my bass player, Sarah, who's also a singer in Spotlights. I wasn't in the band when this happened, but I joined for the tour. So this is how the story goes. I'll try to tell it best. They might yell at me for missing a few things. But Aaron Harris, the drummer for Palms, which is Chino's other band, who was also in the band, in Isis, the band, he was Abe Cunningham's drum tech for years. And he's a good friend of Mario and Sarah from Spotlight. they played a show with Pops at some point, and Isis is their favorite band, one of their favorite bands. So they had met Aaron a few times, and Aaron really liked the Spotlight's debut EP, which, by the way, was self-released and recorded, also self-recorded in a practice space. Really like low budget stuff. He had played it on tour one night for Chino. And Chino was like, "What is this?" It's like, "Oh, this is Spotlight. It's my friends." And he's like, "Oh, this is dope." And he never mentioned, from what I heard, he had never mentioned anything to Aaron or anybody about, you know, wanting us to go on tour. And at some point, Spotlights, this is again, like prior to me joining, this is how I became in the band, by the way. So it's like a double story. They got an email from Deftones agency, booking agency, whatever it was. And it was a guy saying, "Hey, wanted to know what your tour availability is like this August." And this is in 2016, if I'm not mistaken, the Gore Tour. Yes, 2016. And they're like, a really big band on our roster is interested in taking you out. We can't say who it is. And they thought it was a joke. They thought someone was pranking them, and they almost didn't write back. So they thought it was like a fucking, like a total hoax, or like a pay-to-play, like, who is this guy? You know, those people that try to like get you hooked on something. But for shits and giggles, they wrote back, and like, I don't want to misspeak, but I feel like they might have said they wrote back like kind of expecting one of those situations where it was going to be like, let's just see what this person has to say. Eventually, the person got back to them after a couple of email exchanges, and they're like, "Cool, well, if you are available, here's the tour outing." And it was Deftones and Refused on the Gore Tour. And they were like, "Holy shit." And then, and then I think they reached out to Aaron or spoke, and turned out it was real. And they're like, "Geez, this is wild." And their drummer at the time couldn't do the entire tour, so Spotlights had seen me play locally in a couple of bands, Primitive Weapons and this band Han, two local bands in Brooklyn. They had seen us play a bunch, and they're like, "That drummer is awesome." And at the same time, we had the same publicist as Spotlights. Primitive Weapons had the same publicist, and they were like, "You got to hear this band Spotlights. It sounds like the kind of band you would be into. And the, whoever played drums on that record, like, sounds like you." And it was the singers, Mario, play drums on it. So it all kind of like came together. I was at St. Vitus in Brooklyn, which is kind of like a little CBGB's kind of place. And I met the band, we became friends. And when this tour offer happened, they called me, this is even funnier. And they wouldn't tell me who the tour was with. And I said, no, they're like, "Hey, we have a tour coming up. Our drummer can't do it. We love your drumming. Would you do it?" And I was like, "Man, I'm so flattered that you asked." They're like, "We can't, it's with a cool band, but we can't tell you who it is, who it's with." And I was like, "I'm really busy, but I know some drummers I could refer to you." And then they were like, "Look, we're not going to beat around the bush, but like, you can't talk about this with anybody, but it's opening for Deftones and Refused. Can you do it?" And then I was like, I just immediately fucking like ate my words. I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know what? I can figure that out." They're like, "Really? You just figured it out that quickly?" I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it.
You said the magic word.
yeah. That's how we ended up on the
Deftones
tour.
Deftones Refused. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I remember that tour getting announced because it didn't make it to Minneapolis. I mean, that was a cool, that Deftones Refused. That's
ridiculous. I mean, Refused are one of my favorite bands, and I no offense to those guys, I love them. I they're one of my favorite bands of all time. But I forgot that like they were on the tour, like that, like the tour coming up was with them also, because I was so fucking like, you know, just like. Like, I would, like, remind myself that Refused was there, too, and be like, "Oh, my God, how is this even fucking happening?" And it was great. Everyone was so cool. Everyone was super, super personable and awesome.
Do you, does it, any standout memories from those couple of weeks?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, let me preface by saying this. I basically never played a show with Spotlights, which I mentioned to you before we were recording. So... they had already played a bunch of dates without me. And they sort of like warmed up to the whole idea of like playing shows in like casinos and like weird fucking like amphitheaters in front of like 7,000 people. So they had like 5 days of experience over me. And I was watching stuff on Instagram, on YouTube of the band that I was about to play with leading up to it, just being like, Jesus Christ. Like, and like, I never even got a chance to fucking like try to do this in front of my friends or like anybody. So I'm just kind of getting thrown into the fire. And I watched 2 shows with the first drummer on the side of the stage before I even got to play one too. So, like at a Coney Island Amphitheater and then someplace in Boston that was massive. And I'm just like, fuck man, this is wild. So I'm meeting the band, I'm meeting Deftones. I'd known Sergio for a few years already, but I'm meeting Refused and I'm like, okay, it's my time. And I show up to Asbury Park in New Jersey to the Stone Pony, legendary if you're from around here. And you know, sometimes you wonder, is the band really gonna watch us? Are they really gonna watch us? And we showed up to the show late for some reason. I don't know what happened. So my first show, we were late. And as we're fucking pulling up, we're all being rushed. I can't even warm up or do anything. We're just handing my drums to like people that are bringing it on stage, and there's like 6,000 people in front of the stage. And I see everyone in Deftones and Refuse all walking around the stage. And I'm like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. I can't believe this is happening. And this footage of this, by the way, of Chino on the side of the stage the entire time. But I'm on stage playing, and literally, it sounds like a made-up dream. I have like fucking the guys from Refuse to my right on the stage. I can see them watching us. And then to my left, Chino is standing there with Abe. And I'm like, fuck. And I was like, it was weird. And then when I was done, Abe grabbed my bass drum from me, like one of the guys that was like loading shit out, and he smiled and he was like, are you still nervous, Matt? He was like, so are you still nervous or what? And I'm just like, I think I'm getting there, man. Thank you. But it was a total weird thing. Chino learned one of our songs and sang a song with us at our last show.
No shit, really?
Yeah, he came up to us too. He's like, oh really? You guys want to do that? And he's like nervous about fucking it up. And I'm like, what's happening, man?
trip.
Yeah. And we heard him backstage listening to the song for like an hour, like trying to learn it, warming up. And then he came out on stage. It's on YouTube. And then he came out on stage and sang with us.
Yeah. How did it go? Did he pull it off?
He pulled it off. It was awesome, man. And like, I'll never forget like the roar of, it was in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'll never forget the roar of people as he walked onto stage. I was so nervous. So nervous.
Had to blow your mind a little bit. What an unbelievable experience to first, like, to your first time singing in a kit with the band, and you're being flanked on both sides with hardly enough time to, like, crack your knuckles. I can't imagine. Yeah.
I mean, so I should mention this, too, because I work at Revolver. Like, I had met and interviewed them before as a journalist. But I don't know if they remembered me. So I had interviewed Deftones like 2 months before this tour happened.
Really?
Not knowing that I was going to be in this band on tour. So it was like a trip.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mentioned it to them, but I don't know if they actually remembered.
Sure. What was that experience like for you interviewing them?
Okay. You ready for this? This is why I wanted to come on your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm ready.
A really weird story about this. So I flew out to South by Southwest in 2016, just a few months. I think that South by Southwest happens in March, and this tour was in August. So that's how close this was. So I interviewed Deftones backstage. I interviewed Sergio and Chino for a Revolver podcast, and it was great. They were sweet as hell. Really great guys. And I've known Sergio from living in New York. He used to DJ in between Quicksand and Deftones. He was just kind of DJing, and he DJed down the street from my place a lot in the East Village. So I would go down there and watch him DJ, and there would be nobody there. It would be like him and Chaka from Orange 9mm, and we would just like be all fucking fanning out, even though there was nobody there. And so I was like, oh man, like let's like after the. I was like, I'm in Texas if you want to hang out. And my best friend who sings in Total Meltdown, Ralph, and I, like, they invited us to hang out with them. And I was like, kind of shit in my pants. And I'm like, let's be cool. Like, they want us to hang out with them. Let's not act like fans. We got to, like, just try to calm down. And we're meeting up with Frank, Abe, and Sergio, and like a bunch of their friends to go to a cool Keith show.
That's so dope.
At like midnight in Texas, like just like meeting up with a bunch of dudes, like, hey, nice to meet you. Like, what's going on? Like, I'm like, let's just not even address like who they are.
Yeah.
So we, get there and we all, there was a riot outside on the street. And we never walked into the show because we pretty much got like trampled by like, a bunch of police officers on horses and people, and they were like hitting kids with nightsticks and shit. So all this, it's so bizarre that I have these experiences with them, but like people literally ran away from the police, and like there was a crowd of people like falling down, and so we got trampled, like,
holy shit.
Not trampled, but like we all kind of like fell back, and then when we got up, our dreams had been shattered at that point, because I remember like either Frank or Abe or somebody, they were just like, yeah, I don't think this is happening. I think that we should go back to the hotel. And then they were just like, all right, nice to meet you guys. And they bounced. And I looked at my friend Ralph. And I'm like, fuck, we were about to go hang out with Deftones, go to a show. And now that happened. And then it all worked out because I ended up on tour with them. So, yeah.
That's crazy. So what was there, like a bullfight broke out in the middle of, do you know what happened?
There was a lot of chaos, like, South By I'd been going to for 9 years, and it just gets more and more weird. There was just a lot of drunk people and lots of people fucked up on drugs, and there was just too much chaos and people waiting on lines to get in that were restless. So there's just a lot of fights in the street. I think this is the main street that all the shit's on, Red River or something. But the cops got involved, and it was like chaos, and there were thousands of people outside. And we, as soon as we saw like nightsticks and people like running at us,
It's time to go.
Yeah, we were like, it's time to go. I was so upset. I was like, that's never going to happen again. Little did I know I'd be like traveling with them.
Okay, cut. Hi, I'm the guy who biffed the recording of the first conversation. And heads up, this will not be the last time I do this. But fast forward a few days, Chris and I sat down again. And since he's a drummer, I figured he'd be a pretty good person to ask, why is Abe so dope?
His drumming is particularly special because you talked about how there's a bop, right? There's a bop that there's a groove, and there's something that is kind of inherently hip hop in a way, which in New York is totally normal. I'm not from Sacramento, but like, you know, New York hardcore, for example, has a bop to it always, no matter what. It could be Madball or Leeway or Cro-Mags, and you don't get that bop when you listen to Black Flag or Minor Threat. You get that in New York. That's a hip hop influence. I think that Deftones self-admittedly has that. They have a hip hop influence in their music without it becoming Limp Bizkit or any of those things, you know? And it's the beat that drives that. And Abe, Abe has a placement of the way that he decides when the snare is going to hit and where the bass drum is going to hit, that if you're not a drummer, you're not really going to think about so much, but it has an effect on the listener, whether they realize it or not. I mean, that's music in general. You know, not everyone's a musician. You don't know why you're bopping your head, but he is the heartbeat and pulse of Deftones. If he wasn't there, they wouldn't be the same band. We might not like it as much. It's that beat. And if I'm going to get technical as a drummer, he has what we call ghost notes and little things that you hear on songs like Digital Bath or really just a lot of, so there's a lot of songs with drum intros. I'm not going to be able to remember all the titles, but he's got stuff he does with his hi-hats and with the snare drum. Digital Bath is the one that starts out with drums, right?
Yeah.
That's a prime example of what I'm talking about. If anyone needed to just hear an example of what I'm talking about, that beat right there is exactly what I'm talking about.
I know what you're referring to with some of those, like with the ghost notes and like some of the nuance, even though I'm not a drummer and I don't know anything about it. Like, I know enough to have identified some of those influences that people talk about. Like, I've in listening to like the Police and hearing some of Stuart Copeland like isms or whatever. But the last time we talked, you also mentioned Bad Brains, and I went and listened to Eye Against Eye. Like, holy shit!
Did you not like? Were you not as familiar with that until I told you to listen to that?
I mean, I've listened to Bad Brains, but I guess never specifically listening to or for, like, because you were like, I think it was Regeneration.
Reignition.
Yeah. Reignition is the song that you pointed to.
Is Deftones being born right there.
Dude, I was like, whoa.
If you want to figure out where, like, how Deftones even exist, I would put on Reignition. In my opinion, that's what I hear. I'm not saying that I can't speak for them, but that song is Deftones' career in one song, you know?
It's remarkable how throughout that entire album, but especially that song, because like I sought out the song and then I was like, oh, wow. And then listened to the whole album. I was like, there's like all sorts of stuff in here from melody to like style, like all of it.
Absolutely, man. And now we're getting deep into the whole band sound, but before we get off Abe too, you know, I just want to find something here on the Deftones RX Queen, dancey. It's a dancey beat. It's not hip hop. He also has something there going on that's a dancey stuff, like RX Queen, but it's groove. It's still a groove. Also, let's just mention one other thing about Deftones and their groove, which is Stuart Copeland. Like you just mentioned, I mentioned that the other day to you off the record, which is that he is a Stuart Copeland fan. And, you know, every night I was on tour with them, they played the Police as their intro music before they came out. That's how I made the connection. And there's a lot of things that Stuart Copeland did in a mainstream rock band with hit singles that most drummers wouldn't do. Most drummers in a big rock band are going to keep it simple unless you're Rush or Tool or something like that. This guy and Stuart Copeland, he was hitting the bell and doing all this weird shit that all these people at the Police concerts are not listening to that, but that's what Abe does too. There's a direct connection. And so, yeah, the Bad Brains, man, put on Adrenaline. You put on the first song on Adrenaline and listen to Reignition, and you can tell where they fucking got the shit from. Not to mention, I should have told you this, but the entire album Quickness, man, that's got Chino all over it. And that shriek that Chino does, that high-pitched streak, that's Bad Brains. That is not taken from anyone else but the Bad Brains. Hands down, taken from Bad Brains.
I don't know why it hadn't, because I've explored plenty of Deftones influences in the past and have heard Bad Brains brought up tons of times and definitely have listened to Bad Brains. But it seemed like, I don't know, something recently that the last listen, it was like it totally clicked and the vocals stood out. Like it all made so much sense.
Big time. I've read social media comments and like things of like old hardcore guys that for whatever reason happened to be at a Deftones show or saw a band and Deftones played the fest and like, oh yeah, I just saw like the best Bad Brains tribute. you know, and that's not a knock on them, but you know, they've had HR get up on stage and play with them. And not to mention the, as early as the Adrenaline days, they covered Right Brigade. Many times I've seen them cover it 3 times online from then to now. So, and fucking, there's a Bad Brains documentary and in the trailer, Chino says that HR is the best living vocalist of all time. And, you know, I've seen Abe wearing the Bad Brains hat. So, you know, it's some people don't know, but that's where it came from.
it's really cool when you hear artists talk about their influences, and they definitely wear them on their sleeve, but they've also like departed from those and really matured to like see the evolution of how those influences and the style develops and changes, and that's always really fascinating.
You're right. I mean I keep bringing up Digital Bath because I think that's my favorite Deftones song, but that doesn't sound like Bad Brains at all. I mean, you could tell that, you know, they also are influenced by Faith No More, which is obvious to me. So, you know, there's that, but you know.
You know what I heard Abe say on, he was sitting in on, oh, now I'm going to draw a blank on his name. The drummer from Primus has like a...
Oh, yeah. Like Tim Alexander. Yes, totally. Yes. Yeah, he's got that shit too.
He's got like an Instagram live happy hour sort of thing that he does. And so Abe was guesting on it recently, and he mentioned that My Own Summer, boom bop, that boom bop is, he said he ripped off Phil Collins on Easy Lover, the Philip,
wow.
Is it Philip Bailey song? And so I went and listened to it, and you hear it, it's boom, bop, dude, but the drums are a ripoff. He was like, that's me doing Phil Collins.
Dude, you know, it's funny. First of all, I didn't know that. That's amazing. But a friend of mine listened to Errors on Ohms and was like, yo, that's Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver by Primus, that drum beat. And if you listen to My Name is Mud, the drums on that sound like 8 too. But if you put on Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver back to back with Errors, it's not like, I don't think it's on purpose, but the drumming is incredibly similar.
I'm totally going to check that out as soon as we get off this conversation.
It's a goofy song, but like you'll probably be able to tell what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, musically, like, I mean, obviously they were pretty goofy, Primus, but they're also incredible.
But I mean, dude, if you listen to like Korn or any new metal, like you can kind of draw it back to that. Like I never heard Korn in my life when I heard Primus, like they didn't exist. And when you really think about it, or and even if you read interviews specifically with the drummer, David Silveira, he has a video of himself recently covering a Primus song and talking about how influential they were. So like you hear that shit, and whatever you want to say about Fieldy, I'm not saying that I'm not for Fieldy or into Fieldy. I'm just saying like that's Primus right there. That's Red Hot Chili Peppers and Primus. I digress.
But that's actually a wonderful segue into the bass, because I think the rhythm section, it's sort of your wheelhouse. So I would love to hear you talk about Sergio and Chi a little bit and
yeah,
how that works. How did they make that work?
Yeah, they're both very different bass players, which is interesting. But the bass is extremely present and integral to Deftones music. You know, something about a band with one guitar player and one bass player and not, you know, Chino plays guitar sometimes too, but I feel like it's like almost, you know, you can hear the separation of instruments. And so the bass really stands out on its own. And the thing is, Chi is a guy that played with his fingers and he grooved really well. And he was in the pocket with Abe. And, you know, it took me a while to realize that it wasn't the first thing that I thought about when I thought about Deftones, right? Like when you hear some of the bands I mentioned, specifically Primus or Korn or the Chili Peppers or something like that, you hear the bass is up front.
It leads, right? Yeah.
Not really like what you're going to Deftones for, right? But it's there and it's integral. And Chi was real smooth the way he played. If you like isolated the music, he was smooth. Now, what's interesting is that Sergio is a strictly and very proudly, and I say that because I've talked to him and heard him talk about it, he plays with the pick. There are videos of him on Fender commercials playing with the pick. He loves playing with the pick, and he even plays with this weird six-string bass thing now that's almost like a guitar with the pick. It couldn't be more different from how Chi plays, fundamentally speaking. And if you listen to Quicksand, it's very pick-based playing. But he kind of figured out a way to emulate, and I think that's the respect that he had probably for the Deftones sound. You're not going to walk into, you know, any of these bands. You don't step into a known band and then change. You don't walk into Metallica and change Cliff Burton's bass parts. You know, you don't do that. I mean, they've had numerous bass players, but Jason Newsted, even though he played with a pick, and now they have Robert Trujillo with his fingers, they're all very different bass players. But when they play Master of Puppets or Battery, they're not fucking with Master of Puppets or Battery. You don't do that.
Right.
So he found a way with a pick to play all of those Deftones songs in honor of Chi the way that he should. And he brought his own flavor with, I think, Diamond Eyes. I can't speak for him. I'm saying just like, I would imagine going into Diamond Eyes and he did a fantastic job. You know, that's got to be a little tough. And they actually said that he had a lot to do with the songwriting on that and reinvigorated the band. But he really came into his own. And when I listen to Ohms, there are bass parts where I'm like, that's Quicksand. You know, that's a Quicksand bass. He ripped himself off.
It's yeah, his really? Style,
you know, so you can hear that on the new Quicksand record, Illuminant, and the new Deftones record. You're like, oh, dude, that's the same bass player.
You know? I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you, like, how much what you recognize of Sergio's work from Quicksand has crept into to Deftones sound.
No brainer. Put on fucking, well, if you just want to hear what Sergio's signature sound is and what he does, put on the song Omission. It starts off with bass. The whole song is based off of bass, but all of their songs are fucking so bass driven, but that's Omission is the most powerful bass line that guy ever wrote in his life, hands down, including the Deftones material. Sorry, but that's the most powerful bass thing he ever did in his life. Fucking awesome, you know?
It's really cool to see how seamlessly he's become a 10-year now member of this band. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And everything he does, it fits. Like, it just fits. You've already talked about the playing, the performance. Like, his performance is right with what they do. Like, there's just so much...
His aesthetic, you know?
The aesthetic, yeah. Like all of it.
He looks like he's supposed to be in the band. Even if Chi was around, he just looks like he should be in the band with them.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, isn't that wild? I'm glad that you brought up Diamond Eyes, too, because I know that's your favorite. That's...
It's not. It's up there.
Oh, it's not.
No, no. Around the Fur is. Oh, by the way, one quick thing.
Yeah, please.
And people don't know this. Sergio is a hip-hop DJ. So that's something else that people may not realize. He is a DJ here in New York. And that's how I met him because before he was in Deftones. That also, I think, is an important thing to add as to, like, where these guys get that flavor from. You know, I mean, he wasn't in the band for those early records, but they have a bass player in their band who's a hip hop DJ. So what does that say about the band right there? You know what I mean? And like,
no doubt.
Yeah. And quick shout out to his company, because I am a recent transplant to vegan, but everyone check out his clothing line, Pinche Vengano. If you don't know what that is, that's his vegan clothing line. So, but yeah, I just had to shout out some Sergio shit. But yeah, anyway,
I've followed him I've seen you post about vegan food and stuff, I'll admit it, like, I watched that movie on Netflix that was about like the it was the one about the vegan athletes, and like and I was just like blown away by how, you know, these are best athletes in the world, and there are so many more that are going vegan. And it's like, we try so hard to at least do it once a week.
Yeah,
you feel so much better. Your body just changed. Like, you feel lighter. You feel refreshed. It's different. Like, I believe that your body did. Like, the human body wasn't initially purposed to consume meat. I think that vegans are super onto something.
Sergio is fucking very disciplined on tour with how he handles his body. That dude was fucking always going to the gym in every city that existed. Like, every city he went to, and his diet was on point. And these guys, by the way, just to give you a little insight, the Deftones, they can eat, man. They had serious catering back then. I'm talking like everything from barbecues to huge fucking platters of shit to like cakes and all sorts of stuff back there. There was always cakes and all sorts of food back there. Lots of eating going on. And Sergio always was super disciplined. He wasn't eating as much as anybody, and he was always going to the gym. And he talked about it a lot. He was on some special diet, I remember. But that guy is super healthy.
I can't imagine.
I'm going to drop this too, by the way. I'm flexing. Yeah. We actually go to the same gym, and that's another reason why I see him around. So,
oh, no shit.
I have like a lot of weird connections to that guy. Yeah, it's kind of
crazy. I mean, I think about New York as being like one of the biggest cities in the world. Like, to think that you would continue to cross paths with somebody is pretty wild.
Sometimes when he's not on tour, like, working on his, he's got some like physical therapy kind of shit just to like stretch out. Like, so like, I'll just go in there sometimes and he's just with a trainer. I'm like, hey, what's up, man?
That's kind of rad. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine you have to take care of your body, right? Like to bounce around on the stage. Like, I don't care how old you are, but they're not exactly, you know, young dogs in the game anymore. Like, you got to stay on top of it. You got to take care of your body, right?
Absolutely. And you see him fucking jumping around and screaming and singing.
Dude is bouncy as hell. Yeah, he bounces up and down on the stage. It's pretty nice. You know what? I'm glad that you brought up the fact that he's a hip hop DJ too, because you talked about it with Abe and that there's a hip hop influence there, but we don't really talk a whole lot about their hip hop influences, like specifically like which artists they might have pulled from or were drawn to. Do you have any guesses about that?
I'm ashamed that I don't know, and for a very specific reason, because I not only was on tour with them, but every night backstage they played hip hop exclusively, and I never wrote down or Shazammed any of the stuff that was playing. But I did notice from day one that backstage it was straight up hip hop the entire time, like during the show, like in between bands before the show and after the show. It was only hip hop that I ever heard backstage. So
that's awesome.
Kind of a bummer, but I never figured it out. But I don't. Did you get that on recording when I told you the Cool Keith story? Though you did get that.
The Cool Keith story I did get, yes. Okay, definitely. Yeah, that. But I wondered too, like thinking about that story, like was it just 80s guys? Like, what are they into hip hop wise? I mean, I know on the festivals that they've curated, they've always had hip hop acts. Hell, Future, I think, was the headliner, the co-headliner, the first Dia de los Deftones. So I know there's an interest there, but like, specifically is curious. It's fun.
I mean, that they were supposed to tour with Run the Jewels, so, you know, and that's my other, my two favorite records of 2020 are Deftones, Ohms, and RTJ 4. Did I get that right? Is it RTJ 4? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 4, yeah. Yeah, Ooh La La, that beat is just...
Come on now, are you kidding me? Yeah, and then we'll get into it, because you mentioned, but like Frank DJs as well, when he's not in the band, but I'm saying like at clubs. And that's kind of what he does, you know.
I've watched his he'll go live on Twitch, and like, it's not just the music that's dope, but the visuals are also very dope. So you get the sense definitely that they've been doing this, you know, the DJing, the that sort of creative output. Although I guess I haven't seen, I know Sergio's done like at least one or two Twitch DJ sets, but
he does that a lot, yeah. When he's not playing video games, when he's not playing Animal, whatever that game is called, Animal something. Dude, he's a. I could talk about Sergio for a while, he DJs places where he doesn't advertise who he is, and there might not be anybody there, and he just has fun, and that's how dedicated he is. It's one cool perk about being a New Yorker. Is that like throughout my life, I have walked into places and just seen him at a bar, just like sitting there DJing, and there might be like five people in the room. You know what I mean?
Does that ever blow your mind? And you're like, "Yo, does nobody else know who that is?"
Well, it does now. And one time he was DJing at a bar that I co-owned that nobody knew he was at, and he told me not to, say anything about that. But somebody figured it out, and then at some point, like 2 a.m, people started showing up with like Sharpies and Deftones posters, and I almost felt like I had to do security. And he was like, "It's fine, I'm good." But prior to that, before he was in Deftones and he had only filled in when he wasn't in a band, it was actually quite normal to like walk into a bar and see him DJing. And it wasn't like, "Oh, this guy's in Deftones." He was just Sergio.
That makes me want to ask him like his favorite records to play and sort of stuff like that. You know what I mean? Because DJs, they create an atmosphere and they move a room and they do all sorts of stuff that people who aren't creating have no idea what's going on.
I mean, his favorite stuff that I'm aware of that he's told me that's not hip hop is freestyle music. He mentioned to me, I tried to get him to talk to me about Slayer's Legacy for a Revolver article. And he was like, I'm not your guy for that, to be honest with you. But if you want to talk about Lisa Lisa or Information Society or like that kind of shit, I could talk to that. I could talk to you about that forever. I'm like, okay.
That's cool as hell. That's cool as hell. I love that. I love that.
Inside knowledge.
80s, like dance and like do it. Like that's cool as hell. That's super awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So Around the Fur is your favorite, but you thought Diamond Eyes was the best. Is that?
Maybe? Oh no, I'm saying a lot. I know a lot of people that say that Diamond Eyes is their number one, and I know Brendan from Incendiary said that on your podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Two people that I work with who run Revolver Magazine have Diamond Eyes as their number one. So that's probably what you thought I was saying. But it's one of my favorites, but it's not my number one. My number one is Around the Fur, and then my number two is. It's kind of it's White Pony and then Diamond Eyes. Those are my top. Okay.
Oh, I see. I've got a little line scribbled here. I'm ignoring the line and just looking at the notes that I made. Yeah. Haphazard, like okay. So, what do you think it is about Diamond Eyes that makes people think that is such a great record? I mean, it's in your top three. I feel like I sort of understand Around the Fur to be your maybe. Personal connection to the music that makes it
really really did it for me and really like became the record that like I was like hooked, absolutely hooked. Like Adrenaline was cool, but fucking Around the Fur was when I was hooked. But Diamond Eyes, Deftones like developed a dark haunting sound and atmosphere with Around the Fur, and then really expanded on that with White Pony. And it's not like they haven't done it since. In fact, you know, since I last spoke to you, I should tell you that self-titled, I have a newfound appreciation for. So
yes.
and I was also like, these songs rule. Why would I not rank this, you know, up there? Like, I always liked it. I don't know what I was thinking. It's just so hard, right? But Diamond Eyes, like, Around the Fur is great because it starts with that and like this fucking like hits you immediately.
Yeah.
Diamond Eyes does that too with that like fucking like kind of creeps in and just like it just goes in and you're just like, fuck yeah, dude. Like you're just in it immediately. There's no like kind of, they're really good with that with certain albums, like with Koi. It's like just fucking right away. It's like bam, 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 you know, like fucking, But the fact that Diamond Eyes does that, and it's like this, like that I'm going to speak as a drummer, but it's like a 3/4 time signature groove, like a waltz. It's not, it's super unique and weird. But you're just in it right away. And then when the chorus opens up, you're just like, it's fucking great. It's just a great intro. And Rocket Skates is one of the best songs that I've ever heard. It's unbelievable. And there's no skipper on that record. You go straight from the top. It's fucking fantastic. And they switched producers on that, Nick Rasculinus, and he did like Foo Fighters and Rush and Coheed. And, you know, Terry Date was such a great producer for Deftones, who we now hear back on Ohms, which I think is a big reason why it sounds like that. But they came fresh with a fucking new bass player and a new producer after having recorded an album that they didn't release. That's tough, man. And they fuck it. And like two records that weren't as heralded or celebrated. And they just came back and like, boom, fucking here they are.
It was such a surprise. I remember like there was, I think a lot of uncertainty. Like, what is this going to be like? Like G is gone. They're like you said, Eros was sort of in the wind, and nobody knew. Still, it seems like nobody knows what may or may not happen with that music.
Great song that they played that live, though. You were there, right? Sounded like a classic from the first moment you heard it. You know,
I don't know what is going to come of that unreleased material. What do you think? Where? First of all, where is it? Is it just sitting in somebody's computer somewhere? What do you think is?
Have no idea. I mean, I think when those things happen, it's just kind of shelved, and you know, you never know. I couldn't tell you, but you know, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, you know, maybe it's a birthday or an anniversary of chi. I don't know. I mean, that you have to kind of wonder to yourself, like, you know, when's the right time? But yeah, those are kind of like in my mind, like kind of my wishful thinking, like maybe it'll be some kind of like anniversary of something and they want to celebrate him, or, you know, maybe Ohms is so good they can't top it and they think that the next release should finally be Eros. Not that they can't top it, but you know what I mean? They just feel like, you know, we just did that kicked ass. We're going to do the same thing over and over again. Here's a new record. You know, we're getting older. Maybe it's time, you know, maybe that's the next record. You know, I don't know.
Well, it seems to certainly add to the mystique, because there's always been a bit of a mystique with the band. You know, you never really, I feel like as a fan, I never really 100% knew what was going on within the band. Definitely in the past, over the past 10 years, they've become more like they've just become bigger and more successful, and I think more accessible or more candid. So it's cool to like get to know them and learn about them at this stage in the game, but there still is a mystique, and that Eros record, like that being out there, is like,
yeah, like, man, I mean, that song, they played it live. I wish I had known you. I was there.
Shit.
Yeah. That was a great day. When they kicked into it and the chorus hit, I was like, this sounds so familiar in the same way, even though I never heard it, in the way that a classic song would do that, you know, like where Stone Temple Pilots song comes on the radio, or a Pearl Jam song or a Nirvana song. You're like, oh, I know that. That's just part of my life. Like, it sounded like it was like this pre-existing thing that like you would have heard a million times, like a true classic, but it's the first time you were hearing it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I think it does. Yeah, there was a quality to that song that that did harken back to, you know, their I don't know, the golden age, I guess, for lack of a better word, but still sounded new and like ethereal, and the chorus was like, you know, soaring. It sounded sort of like something that was in between that era, that Diamond Eyes era, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's live too. Imagine what it sounds like on recording, blasting speakers, you know what I mean?
Are there any moments, I mean, since you got to go out on tour and do some dates, were there any shows or any moments at shows, like just in watching them perform, that stand out to you, maybe offered some insight as a player, or you just thought were fucking cool?
Yeah, actually, for one thing, I think I mentioned this when we were talking, like seeing, it's just in general, watching them outside, which I've seen a bunch of times. They are a great band to watch at night outside. There's something about it. I saw them outside at Coney Island Amphitheater, as a Stone Pony in Asbury Park. And I've seen them, I saw them at Dia de los Deftones. Is that how they pronounce it when they say it?
They should. I think that's amazing. I don't think I've ever heard somebody do it, but we should from now on definitely put that accent over the last D. Yeah.
I'm Filipino, so I guess it's a little bit of my Hispanic side coming out. I saw them once. I wish I knew which city it was, but two or three things. Like one time I saw them side stage in some random city. I just couldn't tell you where. Maybe it was Portland. I have no idea. Where like me and my bandmates were kind of like alone on like a elevated sort of side stage area, just looking down, and just taking it all in. And I've watched them play like standing behind Abe while he's playing, and just like felt like the fucking thunder. And kind of just like looking up, and it's just his back, and he's fucking like you're feeling like it's everything underneath you is fucking like just like rumbling like an earthquake, and he's fucking going nuts. And he's got the fan blown on him, and his hair is blown back, and he's just fucking like killing it. So I've had a lot of those moments where I'm just like, fuck, man, I wish I could fucking just like be able to like be up on a fucking riser like that, just fucking like destroying shit like that, you know? But just watching them outside at night is my kind of like when they go into digital bath at night, and it's that haunting thing with the little sounds that Frank makes in the background. Or also I would say I saw them outside at South by Southwest in Texas during the daytime, and they played that first song on Around the Fur, and fucking Bushwick Bill, rest in peace, came out and rapped with them for the entire intro. He rapped for Digital Bath's intro, but anyway, just seeing that was during the daytime, not at night, but seeing them outside playing at South By was another memory that I have.
Dude, that's wild. When I talked to Brendan from Incendiary, and I mentioned to him that like they always feel like the sunset band, like they go right there at sunset. You know what I mean? Like they have that magical way of just taking you from day to night. You know what I mean?
Dude, you get this feeling of like nostalgia and goosebumps and just fucking everything about it is just seeing them in Coney Island or Asbury Park, where it's like the ocean is there to your side and it's nighttime. And not to sound all fucking emo, but like it's like stars and the ocean and it's nighttime and there's a breeze and they're playing this shit. There's nothing like that, man. Like there's no band that I've seen that I had that feeling. I've had the pleasure of seeing that many times. But yeah, I remember Brendan saying that it was like Incendiary played Hellfest or one of those festivals and got to see them. Yeah, I mean, I guess I could relate to him on that too. Because when you play a show and you're done and you're just like, fuck, I'm now going to watch this. Just it's so rewarding. You know what I mean?
What a treat to be able to like do what you love to do and then walk off and then watch other bands that you love to hear.
I appreciate it more now than I ever did.
Man, yeah. When we come back, when all of this returns, it's going to feel next level victorious. Every show will be special. You know,
and when this shit goes back to normal, I will fly to shows now to see bands. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I'm going to want to be there so much, and I'm never going to miss a show that comes through my town because I'm tired anymore or like, man, I have to wake up early.
I relate to that so entirely. Yeah. Those moments. Yeah, we need them. We need them back so bad. Okay. This our conversation is going to be like an hour and a half instead of an hour because I've got two shows basically now. So I want to get to your recommendations again. So if you would offer three recommendations of absolutely anything, it's whatever you think is worth putting people onto.
Okay. RTJ4, Run the Jewels, most important record that came out in 2020, actually recorded and written before George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, but how fitting. And I know they wanted to put it out because they were like, we need to do it now. And he says, I can't breathe in a song, which is wild because that was before all that shit went down. It's the most important record that came out this year, hands down, on, you know, just on so many levels. And it's also just great music. So there's that. If you're vegan or experimenting and wanting to go that route, and this is for you, Woody, I don't know if you are a vegetarian, but
I'm trying to at least get to like a day a week and where I commit to not eating any animal products, because I do feel it. You feel it after a day.
Well, this is going to be a loaded suggestion, but I suggest, especially if you're a Deftones fan, Sergio's vegan. And if you become vegan, you can buy his clothes and wear the Pinche Vegano stuff, and you won't be a poser. You'll actually be a real vegan when you wear his clothing line. This is like a whole fucking Sergio, me promoting him. I should be his publicist. And so I'm going to send this to him when it's done. You should. There are great meat alternatives if you're afraid of missing meat. The first one I'm going to recommend is a brand called Light Life, when they make great bratwursts and hamburgers. And I eat that because I'm very allergic to certain things. It's soy and gluten free, but the easy ones are the Impossible, which you can even get at like fucking, you know, White Castle or Fridays, I think, or the Beyond Burger. And there's a thing called Gardein. Or a company called Corn with a Q, and they make really good chicken substitutes. So like there is something for everything if you're going to miss it and you know, and you're not going to be like hurting anybody or the environment. You know, it's all made out of plants and it's fucking pretty. I've had steaks and sausage pizzas and chicken heroes made from this stuff. It's super easy to get, guys.
I always wonder about like preparation. That's the part that starts to scare me. It's not even like, am I going to miss meat or, you know, because I could have chicken is chicken. You know what I mean? Like it's great, but it's chicken. But it's like preparation. Like I think about like, what do I do with this carrot? Like, I don't know how to cook this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they do it for you, you know? I mean, you don't have to do anything. There's a fucking bunch of patties or just like quote-unquote real meat. I mean, just buy a package of it at Whole Foods, you know? Yeah. Go home and try it. Number three, I'm going to do a shameless plug, but I just played drums on the score for an incredible skateboarding documentary that just was released on Amazon Prime Video, and it's called Rom Boys. And it's about a legendary skate park in the UK that started in the 80s, and it's about skateboarding. And it's got some very familiar American skateboarders in it. Me and two guys actually who are huge Deftones fans, and we have a separate we have a text group called Diamond Guys. That's our text group.
That's awesome.
A bunch
that's
of us.
So great.
Fernando Martinez is in that group, and his favorite band is also Deftones. He wrote the entire score to the film, with the exception of like a couple stock things and two acoustic songs. The entire film was written by him. And me, I played drums on most of it, along with Jay Crawford, a great drummer. And he's also in the Diamond Guys group. And one of his favorite bands is Deftones. So I check out Rom Boys, the documentary, if you want to, check out some cool skateboarding shit.
Chris Enriquez from Spotlights, Total Meltdown, Age of Quarantine, Revolver, Vegan Chef. I am so grateful to Chris for his time and generosity, his insight, and frankly, to have been introduced to him. And for that, I have to thank Brendan Garone from Incendiary. Thank you, Brendan. When the world turns right side up again, top of my list is a genuine real-life New York hardcore show with you dudes. Or an Incendiary show, that would be awesome. Or a Spotlights show, that would be stellar. Honestly, I'm so sick that tour with Deftones and Refuse never made it to Minneapolis. Chris mentioned the show in Salt Lake City when Chino joined Spotlights on stage. That is on their YouTube channel. And it's dope. In fact, I would call it a must-watch. It is that rad. Speaking of rad, Chris has one more story to share. Then I'll mention a few guests I've got coming up on the pod. But first, listen to this.
When we're talking about Sergio being a hip-hop DJ, I was going to say Frank is a hip-hop DJ too, because I've been to bars in Sacramento where he was DJing. And he used to DJ backstage a lot. But Spotlights, my band, played at some legendary place in Sacramento that like everybody had played at or been to at some point. It was pretty wild. And Abe Cunningham showed up to the show, and I was like, you know, leading up to it, I was like, I wonder if we just have been forgotten by them. Like, are they ever going to fucking come see us play? Like, I know I run into these guys that through my job stuff, but he came out, and Sarah, still my bass player, still talks to him. I think she talks to him the most. She talks to him the most out of all of us, like, which is relative. I'm just saying, cause I don't have his number and she does, but he came out by himself, and the bummer was that he actually left. He watched the opening bands that opened up for us. We headlined, and he hung out, but I don't know if this is why, but I noticed people recognizing him. I mean, how could you not? I think that him and Frank are the only ones that that still live there. And by the way, him and Frank are like toxic twins. Like I see when I had that Cool Keith experience in Texas, they were together, and like there were times on tour where he went out to like strip malls and went drinking, and it was just the two of them and sometimes Sergio. And then one time we played with Quicksand and Glassjaw, and the two of them came out to that show together, and they were drinking.
That's so sick.
So they're always together, and they still live, and they're like, they still are the ones that are remained intact in Sacramento representing. But people started recognizing him and taking pictures, and I can only imagine that was kind of to some degree like, I should probably get out of here. Yeah. It's not like he had like a handler. He just showed up by himself. And so then We had got wind that there was a party happening that was going to go on like pretty late into the evening or into the morning at a local bar. And we were like, we should go. And so we went, and Frank was DJing, and it was a dive bar. Literally, like, you walk in and like, I can touch the other side of the wall, and now the bar is full, and like Frank is in front of me, and like the entire room is like the size of like my apartment. So like it was super tight, and like Frank's up there DJing, playing shit, and they closed the bar down, and they're like, no, these guys could stay. And we stayed at after hours, and we were fucking drinking. Well, I was sober, but my bandmates were drinking. It was only like us. Me and my bandmates and Frank and Abe and like a couple and employees and a couple of stragglers, and that somebody put on Cardigans, Gran Turismo, one of the songs like from that album, which I know they covered one of those, which is one of my favorite records. And he stopped mid-sentence to be like, oh man, this is the jam. Like, I remember when he first said, like, I'm like, is this really happening right now? Cause like, I know how much this record means to them. And he's just like, the first time we heard this shit, like, he's going into it. I wish I could remember the story, but I was so enamored by the fact that we were having a conversation at like after hours time, you know, and he, I don't remember why or how, but they also like told us a bunch of cheese stories in the middle of the night.
No way, really?
Yeah. I wish I could remember, but it was just the more of the nature of like the two of them just being with us after hours and him being like, yeah. And she was like doing this. And then like him and Abe would laugh and he'd be like, remember this? And they're wasted too. And I'm just like, I can't believe I'm getting this vibe. But I was just so, I was more enamored by the fact that it was happening that it like was distracting me from remembering the stories. And we have a photo that we all took that night. And I love Sarah, I love you. She has it on her phone, but she won't. She's like, I'm not sending it to you because if you follow me online, I post everything I do all the time. Like, you'll see what I had for like breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and what I'm listening to throughout the day, and not very private. And she was like, nope, it's in your memory. This is a sacred memory. It's on my phone. I'm not sending it to you.
Oh man, I love that so much.
Send it to me.
Damn, I love Gran Turismo so much. This story spoke to me on so many levels, but most of all, hearing the dudes were reminiscing about Chi, that was awesome, man. Thank you, Chris. You are the shit. My name is Woody. You can reach me at Woodbruh on Twitter and Instagram if you want to talk about the podcast. I've got some killer guests lined up. Zach and Kelly from 30 Nights of Violence, a sick band out of Nashville with a clearly sick-ass name. I've got a gentleman by the name of Darren Eggleston, who was the radio promotions guy for Maverick Records during Adrenaline and Around the Fur. And he told me about the riot in Arizona in 96. I had never heard that story before. He was there. And I've also got the VP of Creative at Warner Records, Frank Maddox, coming up on the show. He spoke to me for an hour. You are going to trip out when you hear his complete Deftones story. Thank you for listening to Deftones. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods.